Okay, we are back. After Midnight Edition on Rule of Law Radio. RuleofLawRadio.com. Okay, we're speaking with Marcus in Virginia. Okay, go ahead, Marcus. You're wondering why the police officer checked traffic instead of criminal now?
Right, yeah, because I want to find out, well, what would cause them to mark criminal as opposed to traffic.
Well, it depends on the state. It may be that in Virginia, traffic violations are considered civil instead of criminal. Some states call them criminal, some states call them civil. So on his citation, he could cite someone, for instance, for breach of the peace. And that could be a misdemeanor for which he's authorized to release them if they sign the citation. So he can use it for a criminal offense or a civil offense. Was this in a municipality?
This was a county.
Okay, so it wasn't a city municipal ordinance. He could probably use this same citation for a county civil violation. So in this case, if he stopped you for a traffic offense and labeled it civil, it's probably because in Virginia, traffic offenses are considered civil offenses. That's the best guess, not being familiar with Virginia law.
Well, the statute that he cites, 46.2-300, specifically says that this violation is a misdemeanor.
But
class
is it?
Class 2 or class 1.
Then he's accused you of violating a civil misdemeanor.
Civil misdemeanor.
That's a pretty good trick. It probably won't make any difference. If he cited you with committing a specific offense, then whatever he called it won't change it. It will be whatever the offense is designated at under law. So he might have clicked the wrong box on the ticket. But if he stated the statute or the charge that he made against you, it's going to be whatever it's going to be. And I can't see that being a fundamental error. You know, they're going to rule,
well,
oops.
Yeah, but when I go into court, I want to know what the complaint is. Is this criminal or is this civil? I want to know that before I go in.
Yeah, it's the first thing to ask.
The summons a complaint. So, you know, if this is the complaint, you know, it says that it's traffic, or there's a checkbox next to the word traffic, I'm going to take it as a traffic offense, not rather than a criminal one.
Okay, question. How will that affect the adjudication of your case? Yes,
well,
see,
couldn't I be served with a complaint first that...
Well, if you've already been...
What they're seeking to do here?
Well, didn't he give you a citation and have you sign it?
Well, yeah, I signed it under duress.
Okay, but see, that's constructive notice. So you've been... Constructively, you've been notified of the allegations. So you have your notice. I'm being the devil's advocate here.
What I signed was a statement basically saying, let's see, I promised to appear at this time and place.
Yeah, you didn't grant jurisdiction. You didn't do anything to promise to appear. But that establishes constructive notice.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been notified of the allegation that's made against you. If the officer checked the wrong box, I'm sure the court is going to say harmless error. Unless you can show how the checking of that box somehow harmed you or interfered with your ability to defend yourself in the case. And the reason I'm going here is we need to bring questions to the court that if we get a positive answer to the question, we'll make a difference. If we bring issues before the court that that make no difference, that are distinctions without a difference, all we're doing is so much fluff and bluster. And the court's not going to like it one little bit. Even if he was inclined to rule for you, he may rule against you because you're bringing just jump charges to him.
Hello, so sorry.
Eddie dropped out for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
we had a power glitch, sorry.
Uh-oh, okay. So, Marcus, did that make sense to you?
Actually, the phone went mute on my end for like 10, 15 seconds, so I didn't hear half of what you said.
Okay, what I was saying is that you may win on your issue. You know, you may be right that he checked civil and it was really criminal. But in the end, as it goes to the adjudication of the case, it's a distinction without a difference. And generally, I try to avoid raising issues that don't matter. Because one thing, it kind of, it'll prejudice the court against you. And the other, you'll spend a lot of time addressing an issue that's not going to help you when there may be issues that actually will. Generally, in a complaint, if the complaint gives substantial notice, then it is sufficient. If the complaint tells you what crime you're being accused of, and generally the reasons you're being accused of that crime, that's all that it really requires. And a complaint is designed to be presented by a layperson. That's why we have attorneys prepare informations. An information looks just like a complaint, except it's prepared by learned counsel and is expected to be legally correct. The complaint doesn't have to be.
All right, but there was no information in this case. The attorney filed absolutely nothing.
Yeah, generally,
his signature on anything.
Okay, in a lot of states, and I suspect Virginia is one of them, I know Texas is one of them, on a traffic citation, they generally pursue on the citation. And I thought there was a statute on that, but Eddie Craig tells me there's not.
On which specific one?
On pursuing prosecution of a traffic citation on the citation itself and not an information.
Right. Because what that does is that goes against the state constitution, which specifically states it is an indictment or an information that grants the court jurisdiction. And 2.05 says that in any county with a criminal district court, there must be an information filed. And they say if there is no criminal county court or there is no county attorney, then you can proceed on complaint alone. But that goes against what the state constitution says grants jurisdiction to the court.
So that's a question that probably hasn't been adjudicated, or if it has, the courts just blew it off. But this is Texas law, and I suspect that these issues are going to be covered in Virginia law and probably in a similar manner.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
So you might look at the requirement for information. It may be that you can demand an information.
You've gone mute again.
In North Carolina, you could demand an information and then they had to produce one. But if you didn't demand it, they didn't have to produce one. Okay, do you have any other questions?
Well, there was one other thing in the trial. I did appeal it, and I didn't perform that well, but I did do one thing. I kind of embarrassed the judge as far as the attorney for the other side tried to present me with this computer printout from the DMV about my license, okay? this thing had not been certified or verified or anything. There's no signature on it. And I just complained, this is not admissible. I don't see how they can even accept that as evidence. Nothing but a computer printout.
It's testimony on the part of the prosecutor if the prosecutor presented it. And the prosecutor's not allowed to testify. The only way the attorney can get that in is he has to have a witness reference it to give foundation for the entering of the document.
Well, but my understanding, Randy, if it's a government record with no signature, no seal, no nothing, it is an unverified document and cannot be admitted for evidence or any other purpose.
Actually, it can if you have a witness testify to its validity. For instance, he asked the witness, are you familiar with this document? And he said, yes, I am. Will you tell me the nature of this document? Well, I downloaded, I made a request, I queried the computer database for certain facts, and this is what the computer printed out. Well, it wouldn't be signed or verified or any such thing, but you have a live human being testifying to its validity.
Well, yeah, but what I've seen here in Texas is if you ask them for something of that nature, in order for it to be certified, they write up a separate letter certifying the document that they provided to you is, in fact, valid and original.
But in court, when an attorney is developing testimony, he can introduce documents that don't have to be verified because the witness can verify them on the stand under oath. In this case, did the attorney have a witness on the stand?
Yes, he did.
Did he ask the witness something? Did he ask the witness something about?
He tried to send me a copy first before he even brought that over to the cop.
That's what he's supposed to do. Did he create foundation for the document? Did he ask questions about this information of the witness? You see, the prosecutor can't produce this information. The prosecutor has to get a witness to talk about it. And once the witness talks about it, then that gives foundation for entering whatever the document is into evidence. Like he has the police officer on there and he says, did you write a citation to the defendant? He said, yes, I did. This document I'm holding up, do you recognize it? Yes, I do. Is this the citation you wrote? Yes, it is. That's foundation. Now he can enter that into evidence because he had a witness verify it. So the witness is entering that into evidence through the attorney, not the attorney. The attorney can't produce anything on his own because then he would be entering evidence and testifying, and a witness and the prosecutor or the attorney can't testify. Does that make sense?
Well, as far as I know, that printout was not produced in the cop's vehicle. That was produced somewhere else. I don't know where they got it from.
Did the prosecutor ask the policeman about the printout?
No.
So then the objection was foundation.
Okay.
And then what he would have done had to do is ask the policeman some questions so that the policeman would answer the question by referencing this document. And once the witness referenced the document, then it can be entered into evidence. Otherwise, it lacks foundation. So that was probably the objection you needed to bring.
Well, I would say
you might want to get jurisdiction. It goes through these kinds of basic details. And one thing that may make it more interesting to understand is that when attorneys go to law school, they don't learn this kind of stuff. They don't learn this until they get out in the real world. They don't have a clue as how to write a motion or how to file a motion. all the stuff that's in jurisdictionary, attorneys have to learn once they get out of law school. And a good portion of them never do. Okay, do you have any other questions?
Well, my point is that I'm sure the cop just looked it up on his computer screen in his vehicle. He did not see that particular printout until that day.
Well, I think what Randy is saying is the whole point is that it wasn't referenced in court in the proper manner, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't properly entered into evidence. And this is what Randy was saying, that these kinds of things, they go through in the jurisdictionary course.
Yeah, the attorney can't come up and say, "Well, Your Honor, I have this document." Objection, foundation. The attorney can't produce documents to the court. Witnesses have to produce the documents or reference the documents before the attorney can present them to the court. That's what I was going to, was foundation.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, you know, where the cop saw it or when. What matters is how it was entered in evidence in court, or if it was, and if it was it entered properly?
Well, but the other question is does the cop have firsthand knowledge upon that document's generation?
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a question he would have to ask the policeman. Do you have knowledge of this? And can you testify to the veracity of this? You know, this is the evidence would be entered by the witness, not by the attorney.
Yeah, but see, the cross on that from your side should also be, how do you have knowledge of this?
Precisely.
Because he very well could have knowledge because, Sally so-and-so brought it to me and said that's what it was. Well, that's hearsay testimony.
Yeah. See, I was in court once, and I had worked up an amortization of a loan on a house that the guy was trying to repossess the house. And the attorney got up there and asked me who I was, and I told him. Said, "Were you contacted by the plaintiff to prepare an amortization of the loan on this particular piece of property?" I said, "Yes, I was." "Did you prepare that amortization?" "Yes, I did." "This document I'm holding, is this the amortization you prepared?" "Yes, it is." "Your Honor, I move to enter this into evidence." See, he got me to talk about it and tell what it was before he asked to enter it into court. He established foundation. And you have to do that before an attorney has to do that before he can enter evidence.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm going to use the criminal complaints of my traffic cases to file charges on the officer in the court, is I'm going to get him to testify to the criminal complaint that he signed under penalty of perjury, and I'm going to have him lay that foundation in court. So then I'm going to file for aggravated perjury because it contains false statements.
I actually did that in court. I had a little fender bender, and we were sitting in the middle of the street, and this sheriff's deputy come by and said, "That's just a minor fender bender. You need to move these cars out of the street so you don't cause a wreck." So we moved them in the parking lot. And then a local cop showed up, and he wrote me a ticket. I get to court, and I ask the officer, "Did you write this citation?" I ask him, do you recognize this document?" He said, "Yes, I did." "I do. Is this a citation you wrote me at the time of the accident?" "Yes, it is." "So tell me, how did the accident happen?" And he said, objection, Your Honor. The judge said, "Well, you're asking the question." He's non-responsive. He said, "Apparently, I asked him to describe the accident, and he can only testify to what he personally saw." And so I turned back to the officer, and he said, "Objection sustained. Did you see the accident?" "Well, no, I didn't." "Well, how'd you know an accident occurred?" I said, "Where were you when the accident occurred?" He said, "I was on another call." "Well, when you got to the scene, how were the cars positioned in the street?" "Well, they weren't in the street." "Well, where were they?" "Well, they're in a parking lot." "Well, did you measure the skid marks in the street?" "Well, there were no skid marks." Did you examine the glass patterns?" "Well, there were no glass patterns." "Then how did you know an accident occurred?" "Well, I talked to you and I talked to the other person involved in the accident." "So tell me, Officer Pringle, when did you commit aggravated perjury?" "When you signed this citation stating that you had personal knowledge that I'd committed this crime?" or just now when you swore that you didn't? And the prosecutor jumped up. Objection, objection. Yes, Your Honor, I object too. This is horrible. I need you to arrest him for aggravated perjury. And the judge looked at me like they had a brand new prosecutor there. And he looked at me like, you jerk. New prosecutor, you pull this crapola on him. He found me guilty and charged me $10. That was his way of saying, okay, okay, I know. You made your point. But my new prosecutor is not going to lose her first case. But anyway, you can do that. I just couldn't get the judge to arrest him. Okay, enough of my stories. I'm probably getting chastised for telling too many stories too late at night.
Okay, so listen, we kind of need to move on so that we can finish up with the other callers. They've been waiting forever.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Marcus. Okay, we're going to go now to Dan in Connecticut.
Dan,
thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, nothing much. I had a revolutionary new idea for your broadcast.
Uh-oh.
I present to you the rule of law moot court.
We had thought about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd rather that the entire country was just full of mute courts.
We needed someone to...
I was thinking about it myself. And I've been listening to a lot of these broadcasts. I've, you know, of course, been a loyal listener for, oh, so many months. And I figured there are a lot of people who called in. They just really weren't familiar with the entire process. But I'm not sure where the jurisdiction would be, but I figured we could just randomly select it somehow. But if anything, you could probably have Mr. Graves preside over it as the judge of the moot court.
Oh, well, I had an idea for moot court to help people get more comfortable in court. I had planned on having the judge, the prosecutor, and the bailiff in their underwear. and the defendant the only one dressed. Well, how can you take them serious if they're in their underwear? It'll make it less intimidating. I don't think we could get Dr. Graves in his underwear.
Yeah, I don't think you'd need to, but honestly, I was just thinking about that tonight, you know, and I figured, wow, that would be such an awesome idea if we could do this over the program, probably have the preliminary hearings maybe on your Monday show and your Thursday show, and the Friday one would be the trial, and of course, we would just randomly select the jury from callers who volunteered.
That could be interesting.
I thought so, and the jurisdiction and the type of crime would be randomly selected, and if you wanted me to, I could just write up like a different script of what the defendant and what the plaintiff saw, and just see how it happened.
How do we let the jury deliberate?
That's a good question. We could probably they could probably do it over Skype.
Yeah, we could have it's moot court, so we could just have them each make their own determination. I'd like to think about that.
They could probably do it over email, but I know there's a lot to think about. Obviously, it's impossible to convene in person, but if we could do that, and we could have, like, you know, just some kind of a randomly generated case. And I would volunteer to be the defendant because it would be so much fun. I'd really love to do that.
Then, Eddie, you want to be the prosecutor?
I'll take either side you like. I don't know if I can be as totally dishonest and screwed up as they are, but I'll do my best.
I could be a really dishonest prosecutor.
I don't know if I can lower my IQ that far, Randy.
Well, two beers and I have no problem.
Well, yeah, I could go back to having some Korean soju. That'd probably do it. Formaldehyde, good for flavor.
That's a good idea.
Just go with absinthe. Don't cut any corners there.
Yeah, well, you know.
Formaldehyde. I just recommended that to my son-in-law to take vulcanized rubber off of concrete.
Well, they're in every vaccine on the market right now.
Yeah, there's so many other uses for it. It's an enhancer in Korea.
All right, good suggestion, Dan. Do you have anything else for us?
No, that was it. I was just brainstorming this, and I figured, you know, I'd throw the ball at you and, you know, see where you ran with it.
We could do it for a civil case, too.
Yeah, if we ran with it, it got hit between the eyes. Figured out.
That sounds like it'd be interesting.
Well, that was just it. I figured I'd throw that at you and, you know, see if you wanted to take and run with it in the future, hopefully when public officials weren't trying to maliciously prosecute you.
Really?
Yeah, that would be nice if I can get to that point.
Well, I think you're almost there, and I think when you beat the rap on this thing, you'll definitely be there, and they'll know who Randall Kelton is and not to mess with him. So, anyway,
well, I've got
good
two
show,
of them going on at once. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
No, not a problem. Let me know if you need help with that.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Yep. Bye.
Okay. We're going to go now with our final caller, Brian in Pennsylvania. Okay, Brian, thanks for calling back in. What's on your mind?
Sorry, guys. My internet connection sucks this evening, and stupid Alex Jones comes on the listening line.
Oh, so you were just calling in to listen?
Yeah.
Alex, who?
Okay.
I always have comments.
Well, go ahead.
Well, actually, I don't know if I had mentioned it by number, but I had talked about the Clean Water Restoration Act, and for all the listeners and hopefully the people that are going to listen to the archives, it is Senate Bill 787. So it's SB 787. And actually, opencongress.org is a pretty good site, and they have also some other tracking software, I guess, built into that. If you were to, you know, search SB 787 on opencongress.org, you could find other bills being tracked by like-minded individuals, it seems, because, you know, Ron Paul's audit of the Fed bill is there.
Good deal.
Might clue you in on some other stuff that you weren't, you know, already on top of.
All right. Good deal. Thank you, Brian.
I do actually have some other suggestions for listeners that I wish I would have learned myself. You know, I've always tried to plug Hour of the Time when I could. I think they're a great research tool. But I just recently learned of 1984USA.com. You ever heard of them?
No.
Tons and tons of archived news articles, information, and knowledge base to maybe bring people up to speed if they're unfamiliar and, you know.
1984USA.org?
1984USA.com, I believe.
.com? Okay, great.
Wow, it is chock full of stuff. Like that USA versus US.info, you might be familiar with that. It kind of breaks down the commercial, you know, the fornication that took place decades and decades ago that split the, you know, the Constitution from the land and kind of took this, you know, different route that we're on right now.
Great.
That's about it.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks, Brian. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate your broadcasting.
All right, guys, do y'all have anything else?
No, ma'am. Other than I'm glad he said chock full of information instead of chock full of nuts. We got enough of those loose.
Really? Okay, well, very good. Well, then this concludes our After Midnight broadcast edition of The Rule of Law, and we'll be back on Monday night.
Kiss all the parasites from around. Do you feel like I am the murderer? Kiss them with the mouth because they cannot enter.